Bacon, CFRC 101.9.
Donald Talk is a nuisance. Get out there and do it to it. Love and kisses.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Cataraqui on Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee land.
Good evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. At their last meeting, council voted to defer a decision on allocating up to $350,000 for events marking the anniversary of the Tragically Hip's final concert. 2026 marks the 10th anniversary of the Tragically Hip's final concert, held in Kingston on August 20th, 2016 at the Rogers K-Rock Center. The original motion would have approved funding from the city's working fund reserve to support programming, events, and activations tied to the anniversary. However, council and residents alike have expressed concerns about the size and scope of the proposed funding. Councillor Wendy Stephen brought forward a deferral which would delay the decision until March of 2026, directing staff to return with more detailed information about the planned events and how the funds would be used.
The Tragically Hip are a Kingston band, and the celebration of the 10th anniversary of the final concert should be an exciting and celebratory opportunity for the community to come together and to look forward to the events and programming that is yet to come. In closed session, council had the benefit of learning more about the still confidential events and programs that are currently being planned for here in Kingston. Staff have indicated they're not able to discuss activation details as negotiations are still ongoing. And while there's some risk to approving the funding, or sorry, to not approving the funding this evening, but that risk really needs to be balanced with council and community's ability to better understand how this requested money will be used ahead of the funding approval. So this motion will hopefully allow staff to return with additional information that can allow council and community to consider this opportunity with greater insight into what this investment will bring to Kingston.
Several councillors voiced their support for the deferral, saying more clarity is needed before committing public funds.
Yet again, I find myself in an unusual position where I'm agreeing with a motion to defer. I think that there is a lot of uncertainty with regards to what this money is being used for. I certainly have heard considerably from the community about some of the inappropriateness that this money is being spent, considering that there are other really important issues in the community, especially related to food insecurity and housing and homelessness. My hope is that when we do defer this motion, I agree that I think it's appropriate that we get the public some more information, that it can be clarified at that time. So I'm hoping for staff to come back and just provide some more assurances to the community that this money is being well spent, and also some idea of where the money, this $350,000 is going.
I received a number of emails and concerns from my constituents about the amount that was being used. It appeared to be a slightly open check with the inability for council to show their governance and due diligence and what an understanding publicly of what the $350 was being used for. So I am prepared to support the deferral, knowing that I had a large amount or grave amount of concerns with the original motion.
I think the optics of this are very hard to swallow, especially with the current climate out there. So I'll vote in favor of the deferral and hoping that we can understand and maybe reset the narrative on the benefits that go with this. But without that, I don't think this is something that I could support down the road, but willing to see what a deferral could bring to change sort of how this is perceived in the public, which I think we're all getting emails on. I know I sure did.
Counselor Jeff McLaren took a stronger position, arguing the funding should be voted down outright.
I won't be supporting this because I don't support spending this kind of public money on a party. This is a bad use of public funds, regardless if they come from property taxpayers or from other taxpayers. They're all the same. So I wouldn't be supporting this in the future, and I think we should vote it down now.
In the end, council voted to defer the motion, with all councillors in favor except Councillor McLaren. Staff are expected to return to council with additional details ahead of the March 2026 discussion. After a motion that passed unanimously at council's last meeting, the city is looking to make improvements to the public consultation process related to new supportive and emergency housing solutions. This motion, brought forward by Councillor Lisa Osanek, is the result of community feedback regarding the approach to engagement on three recent supportive housing sites. One Kingston resident that lives near one of the recent sites, Joe Grattan, spoke to the issue before council.
The last time I stood here, I was hopeful I would be heard. Today, I'm simply frustrated. I'm here today to speak in support of the motion regarding consultation and public engagement on supportive and emergency housing. To date, this process has been a disaster, and it's clear changes are required. Residents have been stonewalled when seeking basic information. We raise legitimate questions about site selection, operational impacts, zoning compliance, program effectiveness, and neighborhood compatibility. We were told our concerns were unfounded, yet no evidence has been provided to support these claims or address the issues we raised. Meaningful consultation must happen before locations are announced and in the neighborhoods being impacted. Communication must be exhaustive and proactive. Reports buried in council agendas are not engagement. Announcing a finalized location and then dismissing criticism as NIMBYism is not engagement.
Councillor Lisa Osanek and seconder Councillor Gregory Ridge explained the intention behind the motion before council.
This motion is to look for improvement in the process. I'll be really interested to see how, like, what the comparison is of how we're doing it compared to other cities. I know that we're not the only city that is buying housing in neighborhoods for supportive housing. So I'll be really interested to see how that comparison comes out. Also, if it is decided that we're allowed under a human rights-based approach to continue to, give notification to neighbors, doing the flyers in the mailboxes, then the process that comes back to us, it is going to have to be that we do that notification on a Monday, not on a Friday, and not during the last 2 weeks of December. Even if that means that a house closes during the last 2 weeks of December, we wait until January on a Monday to give that notification, just to really keep that transparency.
This issue about communications, especially with the sensitive nature of the supports or the emergency services that are being provided in the neighborhood, is one that I've heard many times from constituents. And I think that this is an iterative process. This is something where we learn from what we've done, and then we improve the process over and over again so that there's an acceptable standard operating procedure that we can move forward with. So I'm happy to support this. I'm happy to work towards an ideal solution or an ideal operation.
In the current process for supportive and emergency housing sites, properties are acquired in closed session, later released publicly through door drops and the creation of a Get Involved Kingston page, and discussed in community meetings. Proposed improvements include, but are not limited to, consideration of the timing and methods for information sharing with near neighbors, the scale and format of engagement meetings, confirmation of the role of the site operators in these engagements, and the processes for receiving, responding to, and reporting back on community concerns. Many councillors expressed their agreement with the need for improvements and frustration on how the process has been going with recent sites, including Councillor Ryan Bohm.
Fear grows without the lack of information. So I'm going to just paint a little story on this. So closed session, you're essentially sworn to secrecy. You have information, you cannot make it public, or you are in breach of your code of conduct and there will be an investigation, and we know how that plays out. So you'll have information as a counselor at times that you're unable to share with the public. That can be quite frustrating, especially when somebody from the public reaches out to you and says, hey, what do you know about this address? and it's the exact address that you can't share and it's confidential, and you're going because it's being discussed at the local gym. Well, this isn't just vague. It might be in this area of the district. This address was known long beforehand, before the city had any official statement, and you're sitting there going, oh dear. What do you do at that point? So you basically kind of try to get information out as best as possible. And so to say that we can do things better, we have to do things better. That information has to be put out there. We tend to do things, unfortunately, with many things lately in a very reactive role when it comes to communications. And it's very frustrating. You put information out, you make a decision, you call something engagement that's not really engagement, and then you provide a bunch of information after the fact. People are rightly upset and they have a right to be. We need to do better with our communication. Supportive housing can be successful, but we also need to set it up to be successful and not create these additional challenges for ourselves and actually have the public realize this is a successful model. We shouldn't have to convince them. They should already know because we've done the legwork ahead of time.
Councillor Brandon Tozzo noted that while the process will be improved, the city's process of acquiring properties in closed session will likely not change, and there is still friction beyond communications to be addressed.
Our process of purchasing houses in closed session is likely not going to change to this. I'm going to say just a few quiet things loud, and I think it's worth noting where we get our direction from as a council for the policy that we give to staff. We get our direction from the public. So when we run for election, we knock on doors and we hear from thousands of people who give us direction of where they want the city of Kingston to go. And you know the number one thing I heard at the doors when I was knocking? Homelessness and housing. So I think it's worth knowing that the policies that we put forward, and this becomes a challenge every time we deal with shelter-related issues or housing-related issues or density-related issues, is the public is kind of getting what they're asking for when we put these policies forward. So for as far as what the policies that we're putting forward, I fully agree that we can communicate things better. But we are delivering what you told us to do when we ran for election in 2022. And when we knock on doors later this year, we will deliver what you tell us to do. If you're asking for us to solve homelessness, we're going to throw everything we possibly can to solve homelessness, Your Worship. If you're asking us we need more housing, you're going to get housing. We listen to the public and we're the most local, accessible levels of government. So I would just say to the public, you're getting what you're asking for. We can certainly do this better. We can work with neighbors. But if this is your top priorities at the door, you know, kind of be careful what you wish for.
Recommendations to improve this process will be brought to council by July 2026. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Hello, my name is Henry, and you're listening to Queen's Campus Beat, home of your Queen's Campus and student news here on CFRC 101.9. Starting off with off-campus life, rising rental costs continue to shape the Queen's student experience. A report from Zumper's Canadian Rent Report shows rents in Kingston have surged, making the city the fourth most expensive rental market in Canada. In response, Kingston City Council passed a motion on February 3, 2026, directing work on a student housing strategy aimed at expanding housing supply and improving conditions, particularly for university students. Councillor Connie Glenn underscored the students have been treated as full constituents in past planning, and that new zoning tools and partnerships will be essential to boost development. The university planning experts have pointed to opportunities on properties near campus, noting sites like Clergy Street and areas behind Stouffer Library could offer space for potential future residents. Earlier this week, Queens marked the launch of Black History and Futures Month, with an open house held on Monday, February 2nd at Robert Sutherland Hall to highlight equity, decolonization, and community engagement. In other campus events and news, across campus, student politics remain active. Petitions calling for the resignation of AMS President Jane Amer have been circulating, underscoring heightened engagement and scrutiny with student governments and accountability. In terms of new internal debate here on campus, this past week at Queen's, discussions surrounding the university's future have intensified following the release of several leaked consultant documents connected to Queen's bicentennial vision for 2041, a long-term strategic plan announced publicly on January 28, 2026. The leaked materials suggest structural recommendations, including focusing enrollment efforts in areas where Queen's sees national and global research impacts, integrating digital and AI capabilities into teaching, and potential realignment of programs. However, many faculty and students, particularly within the Faculty of Arts and Science, are alarmed. Reports indicate proposals could result in cuts amounting to around 3,500 ArtSci students and greater prioritization of science, engineering, and health disciplines. A parallel leaked plan even proposes establishing a fully virtual school, tentatively titled the School of Professional and Continuing Education, with an acronym provided SPACE, which would enroll up to 10,000 online students and offer micro-credentials and lifelong learning programs. This shift has sparked debate on campus, where some see digital expansions as innovative, while others warn it could dilute the traditional in-person university experience that Queen's is known for. The Union Gallery, inside of Queen's Stauffer Library, continues to host the exhibition The Black Experience through Wednesday, February 11th, 2026. This collaborative exhibit, organized by the Sunbeaming, the AMS Social Issues Committee, and the Yellow House Student Center for Equity and Inclusion, documents the Black student experience at Queen's through photography, text, and archival materials. It's open to all students and community members here on campus. Thank you for listening. I'm Henry Walker with your Queen's Campus Beat here on CFRC 101.9 FM or online at cfrc.ca.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. We begin with Monday, February 9th, daytime high of minus 12, feeling closer to minus 14. Sunny conditions, but it is going to be chilly. Tuesday, February 10th, daytime high of minus 3, 2 to 4 centimeters of snow in the forecast, going to feel closer to minus 11 with the wind chill. Wednesday, February 11th, daytime high of minus 1, so the warmest day we've had in a couple of weeks here in the city of Kingston, feeling closer to minus 7 with the remnants of that 2 to 4 centimeters in the forecast for Wednesday evening. Thursday, February 12th, daytime high of minus 2, actually feeling slightly warmer at minus 1 with sunny conditions, dropping down to minus 16 overnight. Friday, February 13th, daytime high of minus 5, actually feeling right around 0 in the sunshine. Saturday, February 14th, Valentine's Day, daytime high of minus 2, feeling closer to minus 11, so if you've got somebody to snuggle up with, keep them warm. Sunday, February 15th, daytime high of minus 3, going to feel closer to minus 11. And then starting off next week, Monday, February 16th, daytime high of 1, but we've got cloudy and cool conditions. It's actually going to feel closer to minus 6 when all is said and done. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. Kingston's overnight winter parking ban is in effect for the months of January and February, which prohibits any and all overnight street parking between the hours of 12 a.m. and 7 a.m. Restrictions will loosen on March 1st. From that point on, for the rest of March, overnight street parking is only banned if the weather conditions require it. And with no relevant road closures to report, that's it for your City of Kingston traffic report for this week.
Does pineapple belong on pizza? In case anyone is concerned about my opinion, I think that respectfully, it absolutely does not. But to each their own, I guess. What's up, everyone? It's your girl Gigi, CFRC's newest intern, and you're listening to What's Live at 5 on CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up on this segment, I've got K-Town's hottest concert and event calendars for the week, starting with events. On Monday, February 9th, catch the Morning Doves at Musiki Cafe and Whiskey Bar at 8 o'clock p.m. until 11 o'clock p.m. And if you haven't already, don't forget to start your Valentine's Day prep. On Tuesday, February 10th, visit the Valentine's Day card sale at the Athletics and Recreation Center at 10 o'clock a.m. until 5 o'clock p.m. All sales go directly to student artists. Looking for a housemate? Come to the Housemate Search Social for cookie decorating, good vibes, and potential new friends or housemates. Just bring yourself, everything else will be provided, at the Ban Ri Fireside Lounge at 6 o'clock p.m. until 8 o'clock p.m. The Fiercely OK Song Circles will also be happening on Tuesday at the Kingston Community House at 6:30 p.m. until 8 o'clock p.m. No former singing experience required. For Wednesday, February 11th, what's your favorite board game? When I was little, I used to love playing checkers with my dad, but this past summer, I was a camp counselor, and the kids and I loved to play Uno. One thing about me and board games is I am not gonna hold back, regardless of who my opponent is. Anywho, board games at Something in the Water Brewing Company at 5 o'clock p.m. until 8 o'clock p.m. Sean McCullough will also be performing at the Cove Inn for Wings and Tunes at 5 o'clock p.m. until 8 o'clock p.m. and Wednesday night karaoke at the Mansion at 9 o'clock p.m. On Thursday, February 12th, get ready for some high-energy Zumba at the Athletics and Recreation Center in Studio 4 at 12 o'clock p.m. to 1 o'clock p.m. No dance experience required. Looking to unwind and meet new people? Drop by the weekly Urban Music Social at The Loft at La Vida Bistro Bar and Social at 9:30 p.m. for urban, R&B, hip-hop, and soul music. Calling my beginner and seasoned artists to paint a loose and luminous forest at Michelle Reed Studio at 9 a.m. The class focuses on loose brushwork, technique, and developing your own style. All materials included, just bring a lunch. Daft Brewing will be hosting a drag bingo with prizes, drinks, and crazy times at 7 o'clock p.m. until 11 o'clock p.m. On Friday, February 13th, Slush Puppy Place is celebrating the launch of the new banana slush puppy flavor with a drone show at the Tragically Hip Way at 6:15 p.m. Afterwards, you know what to let them know. Watch the K-Town Fronts face the Kitchener Rangers at the Slush Puppy Place at 7:05 p.m. The Renaissance Supper Club is hosting the Golden Years Murder Mystery, a fully staged murder mystery performed around you. Stop by for a dinner you'll never forget at 6 o'clock p.m. until 9 o'clock p.m. Bring your cowgirl hats for Friday night karaoke at The Buckle at 9 o'clock p.m. Saturday, February 14th is Queen's Observatory Open House, this time's theme, Magnificent Desolation, Lunar Exploration Past and Present, featuring Dr. Ron Vincent, Professor of Physics and Space Science, followed by a tour of the Queen's Observatory, where visitors will have the chance to view planets and or other celestial objects with provided telescopes. Join at Ellis Hall at 7 o'clock p.m. to 10 o'clock p.m. Purchase tickets for Chinlock Wrestling, Love Hurts, a high-energy, family-friendly professional wrestling in support of Ryandale Transitional Housing, a local organization that has spent more than 40 years helping those who need it most. Love Hurts is more than wrestling. It's about showing up for our neighbors and proving that community care is strongest when it's shared. That's Chinlock Wrestling at 1300 Bath Road at 6 p.m. until 10:30 p.m. Sunday, February 15th is Family Ice Fishing Day at Elbow Lake Environmental Education Center at 10 o'clock a.m. until 3 o'clock p.m. Swing by the Memorial Center Farmers Market at the Kingston Memorial Center grounds at 9 o'clock a.m. until 1 o'clock p.m. for fresh foods and to show your support to local vendors. Sunday means fun day at the museum. Drop in at the Great Lakes Museum for activities, crafts, and games anytime between 10 a.m. to 1 o'clock p.m. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Next up, our concerts calendar. Monday, February 9th is Jazz Mondays. If you tuned in last week to Aboriginal Voices, Tuesday at 6 o'clock p.m. in case you're interested, you'd know that I love a good jazzy tune. Join Michael K. Myers, Rick Flanagan at the club at RCHA at 4:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. If you're looking for some weekend fun, I got just the thing for you. On Tuesday, February 10th, visit Tom's Tunes Day. Get it? Tunes Day. I love that. afternoon happy hour jam with Tom Savage at the club at the RCHA at 4 o'clock p.m. to 7 o'clock p.m. It'll feel like a Saturday evening, but on a Tuesday afternoon. Happy hour drink pricing and pizza will be available. On Wednesday, February 11th, K-Town is hosting Matt Anderson, a New Brunswick-born songwriter with over 33 million streams on Spotify and 30 million views on YouTube. Catch him at the Kingston Grand Theatre Rosen Auditorium at 7:30 p.m. Nolan Hubbard will be playing at the Bank Gastro Bar at 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. and Christopher Jackson at the Creekside Bar and Grill at 6 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. If you're looking to enjoy some more jazz, on Thursday, February 12th, the Fusion Quartet, featuring Oscar Evans on bass, will be performing at Hotel Wolf Island in the historic Piano Lounge, 7:30 p.m. until 9:30 p.m. Chris Murphy, singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist, will be at the club at the RCHA performing originals and covers. Catch him live at 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. And Original Thursdays with Christine Graves, a folk singer-songwriter from Ottawa, Ontario, at the Cove Inn at 5 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. On Friday, February 13th, stay safe and experience the Venice Baroque Orchestra, recognized as one of the premier ensembles in the world. This performance features Vivaldi, Tartini, Veracini, and Locatelli at the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts at 7:30 p.m. to 9 o'clock p.m. And for my metalheads, don't worry, I haven't forgotten about you. Come out and support Exogen, Arachnia, Crown of Antlers at the Broom Factory at 7:30 p.m. to 10 o'clock p.m. If you prefer authentic rock and roll, listen to the Lowery Band at the Lakeside Bar and Grill at 7 o'clock p.m. to 10 o'clock p.m. Saturday, February 14th, wishing you all an early happy Valentine's Day. I know I've got plans, but do you? Looking for some unique date ideas? I've curated a few diverse options just for my listeners. If you're looking for something lighthearted, maybe this is a first date, your friend set you up, or this is a situationship and you need something to break the ice, enjoy an uncensored comedy show with Steve-O, the Crash and Burn Canada Tour, at the Kingston Grand Theatre Rosen Auditorium at 7 o'clock p.m. If you're looking for something a little more physical or you missed your prom, come to Slow Dance 2026 with DJ Raf Riza, DJ LK, DJ Georgie, Jermaine Marshall at the Grad Club at 9 o'clock p.m. Formal dress is encouraged to set the mood, but not required. Photo booth will also be on site. If you're looking for something a little more intimate, may I suggest jazz? Join Andrew Scott for a Valentine's Day jazz set at Hotel Wolf Island at 6 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. And okay, work is busy and life gets in the way. I get it, of course. But you have no excuse, because I've got some Sunday Valentine's Day ideas. On February 15th, candlelight concerts are coming to K-Town. If you're looking for something a little more sophisticated, Candlelight, featuring Vivaldi's Four Seasons and more, will be at the Spire at 6:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. If that's not quite your thing and she prefers Trouble, or her birthday's in August, or you want to shake it off, I hope someone's getting the reference here. Visit Candlelight Tribute to Taylor Swift at the Spire at 8:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. If you're looking for some relaxing vibes and just want to hit the bar with some drinks and chats, Scott Owen is playing at the Brass Pub at 10 o'clock p.m. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. No matter what you're into this week, music, food, dancing, or just pretending you have your life together, I've got you covered. For more details on all these events, check out cfrc.ca and lock in right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. You're listening to Gigi on CFRC Radio, and from me to you, have the best week ever, be safe, be kind, happy Valentine's Day, and I'll catch you next week.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
CFRC from Kingston, Ontario. Your volunteer program, campus and community radio at 101.9 FM and on the web at cfrc.ca.
Hi, and welcome back to Cuban Sounds in Canada, where we hear the sounds of Cuban and Cuban-adjacent musicians in Canada. I'm your host, Karen Dubinsky. Let's start with a lively number from an early Toronto-based group of Cuban music aficionados. Clave y Congo was a group of young Canadian musicians drawn from the world of rock as well as other musical backgrounds who came together in the 1980s to teach themselves the sounds of what's called son montuno, a traditional Cuban music genre from the eastern part of the country. They had a regular gig at a College Street sports bar called the Cerveceria, where Cuban sounds without Cubans percolated for several years. Freddy Monasterio and I interviewed one of their members, guitarist Jay Danley, who told us how the group taught themselves to basically sound like they were from the mountains of Cuba in the 1930s. They did this by listening to old albums. They even made their own instruments. Here's Clave y Congo singing the popular traditional tune Bonito y Sabroso.
Mira qué bonito y sabroso.
Musician Jane Bennett is another well-known product of the same era as clave y congo. Bennett is an award-winning sax player who, along with her partner Larry Kramer, helped popularize Cuban sounds in Canada and also recorded with Cuban musicians in Havana before there were many in this country. Later, she started performing with some well-known Cuban women who made their homes in Canada and the U.S., in a group called Makeke. I'm going to play two songs from Makeke's self-titled 2014 album. We'll start with the beautiful De La Habana a Canada, and after that we'll hear another really melodic piece, Mame Colorao, which features a piano solo by guest artist Hilario Duran.
mi cha-cha-cha para que veas de La Habana.
Pianist Sean Bellaviti has been involved in the Cuban music world in Canada for some time. He's also a music scholar with a PhD from the University of Toronto, a book on the traditional music of Panama, and a teaching job at TMU. As a band leader, he works with many groups, including Conjunto La Calu. Here's a piece from their 2017 album, Toronto Mambo. The song is called Caballo Viejo, Old Horse.
Se le desgarra y no le hace caso a falseta y no le obedece al freno ni lo paran falsas riendas.
Solo una,
ándala como a ninguna. Verás que con el amor alcanzarás las estrellas.
Here's another more recent Toronto-based group of musicians, Joaquin Nunez y Habana Safari. Last year, Nunez, along with New York-based Cuban pianist Dairamir Gonzalez, put out a really beautiful album, Ruta de la Clave, which is a tribute to the many different genres of Cuban music. Here's a song called Una Guajira in New York. We'll end with this. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Hello, this is Jamie from Shushu. You are listening to CFR. C 101 point what?
Nine.
And CFRC what?
.ca.
Dot C A.